If you enjoy podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Healthcare for Humans, hosted by Dr. Sundar, expands our understanding of the history and culture of different communities and how to provide culturally responsive care. There's an episode you should check out where guest Dr. Duran details the systemic barriers faced by individuals with DACA status and highlights the importance of addressing these barriers. Check out Healthcare for Humans on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.
Hi, welcome to Beyond the Paper Gown. I'm Dr. Mitzi Crockover. Today's episode is part of our Candid Conversation series, where we delve into health and healthcare topics with guests from both within and outside the healthcare field. Today, we're focusing on the interplay between humor, health, and the connections that bring vibrancy to our lives, as well as the challenges and opportunities presented by professional transitions later in life. You know, our global population is aging. Over 700 million people are currently over 65, a figure expected to double by 2050. At the same time, we're in a loneliness epidemic, with more than 40% of adults over 65 feeling isolated. All this points to the importance of making meaningful connections, navigating life's transitions, including career changes, as well as advocating for our health. We're also going to talk about the benefits of humor. Laughter reduces stress hormones, alleviates pain, and even boosts the immune system. And it also helps us connect with others and hear messages we might not have been open to. I'm excited today to welcome Steve Lichtenstein, an actor and award-winning filmmaker, and Dina Bakowitz, a performer, strategist, and advocate for women's empowerment. We'll hear how they use storytelling and humor to bridge gaps and strengthen individual bonds. They'll also share their personal stories about what it takes to make transitions at later stages in life. And we'll get some practical tips on how to advocate for yourself during medical appointments. Considering that the average doctor's visit lasts less than 20 minutes, it's crucial that we master effective and efficient communication with our healthcare providers. And, of course, we'll also share some healthy laughs throughout. This is a real special edition of our podcast. It is what we're calling a candid conversation, and we have two of the most candid people I know. Steve Lichtenstein is an actor, and he's going to tell you a little bit more about himself in just a moment. And Dina Bakowitz is so much, and she is... she is a performer, she is a strategist, and she is a networker par excellence. So with that introduction, I'm going to actually let them talk a little bit more about themselves. So Steve and Dina, thank you so much for being with us. Dina, let's start with you. Can you give us a little bit of a bio and tell us a little bit
about
yourself?
Well, I think
yourself?
You said it best when you said I'm a lot. I've been told that before. And there is an expression I love.
In a good way.
There's an expression I love. It says, you will never be too much for someone who can't get enough of you. Ooh, right? And I think that applies, you know, personally in my case as a single woman and professionally to all of us, right? So finding that fit. And to your point about healthcare and the arts and business, those are my three of my main careers. I've had many different career iterations. And my healthcare background was and is as a social worker. I created programs for patients and families and healthcare workers around communication, therapeutic, humor therapy programs, conferences, and then in the arts, both as a performer and as a producer and an arts marketer, and in the business world in marketing and branding and business development. And through all of it, my through line is people. Like, my passion for people is what gets me up in the morning. And as you know, in social work, we say those who are the most isolated are the most at risk. And in business, we say your network is your net worth, which is still a little crass, but, you know, surrounding yourself, having social support systems, and now with the loneliness epidemic, helping people connect better is really what I do through comedy, through business, through a healthcare community, and through dating.
Well, we'll talk about all of those in just a moment. Steve, welcome also. Tell us a little bit more about you.
Thanks for having me.
Of course.
A little more about me. Well, there's a lot about me too. I am also a slash, but more in the entertainment sector as far as a producer, writer, actor. I started filmmaking about 5 years ago and have produced a short prior to this called Aaron with Two A's, and now my new one. But it also deals with a lot of the things you're talking about, which is human connection, health, and so forth within the environmental crisis in the near future and also technology, all that. I have been acting, my mother would tell you, since I was a kid, acting out in some cases. And before I knew I was a creative person. But I have been for years, theater, film, so many other things. There's a film coming up, Infidelity, that I would love to push because I was very excited to be in it with Cara Buono and Chris Parnell and, also Willow Shields. But I am multifaceted because I had a prior life, which also was my day job as a project manager for a number of years. We won't go into that age thing, but...
yeah, we will in just a moment, but go ahead.
No, I love acting. I love the arts. I love storytelling, and I know we'll get to that. But storytelling, I can't even... It's who I am. It's... my heartbeat, it's my life, it's saved me several times in my life, and you better love it if you're going to do this. Okay. And that's about it, I guess.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit. You alluded to the film Aaron with Two A's, which has garnered a number of awards as it's been viewed in a number of film festivals. And of course, I love it. And it tells a story about a man who decides to pursue his dream of acting at a relatively late age or later stage of life. And despite the odds of success and the pushback from friends and family, what were you hoping to do with this film in addition to entertaining?
I'm sorry. I'm laughing at the word entertaining.
It is entertaining.
No, it is. But everything you don't set out to necessarily writing a script to entertain somebody. You start really? Out with something that comes through you trying to impact an audience.
Okay.
In a certain way, and it is entertainment. But it's also, but doing it brings up a lot of angst and experience from your own life and so forth. So, yeah, what did I intend? I intended to impact somebody's life, hopefully to change something, which is what you're doing as an actor, as a storyteller, is trying to have somebody change or at least be moved in some way by what you do. And so, it's an experience when you're sitting in a Q&A and somebody stands up in the back and is a younger person and they lock eyes with you and they tell you that this changed their life, this inspired
wow.
them. There's nothing like that. And it's sort of like an Oscar-winning film. Nobody sets out to make an Oscar-winning film because you can't. So it's like you tell a story, and that's what you're trying to do.
No, and it sounds obviously that it was successful in that it did impact folks. And Dina, since I've known you, it's been a relatively short period of time, but every moment has been great. And again, you bring laughter to all of your interactions. And as you noted before, you were a performer, have been a performer. I've seen you perform. How do you find that comedy breaks down barriers?
Well, comedy definitely connects us. It normalizes and validates human experience. Comedy is proven to be stress relief. And, you know, reducing stress helps women avoid, prevent, minimize the risk of heart attacks and heart disease, for example. We all know mental health and emotional health. For me, comedy originally, I only started doing stand-up in 2018, and it was by accident. I was leaving a singles party. And there was a funny thing happened on the way from a singles party, and there was a comedy show going on, and I'm leaving with a man on each arm. type A, accomplishment, result. We have a goal. Let's go after it. But right, like, as I'm saying this to you in a funny way, at the heart, right, we are all emotional beings. And what Steve said about we want to touch people appropriately, and we want to move them, and we want to evoke a response, whether that response is fear, laughter, awe, action. So I can honestly tell you that I never really strategically thought about comedy, but it was always a part of my life and my background and my family.
Maya Angelou was, I believe, credited with saying, "People will forget what you told them, but they won't forget how you make them feel." Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit about, adjacent to that, is that using humor to diffuse situations or to maybe talk about things that you wouldn't want to talk about otherwise. And the program that you alluded to before was that you and I and Joy Rios, who is a podcaster and also started a company called Like a Girl Media, she wanted to build community and talk about a health issue. So we talked about heart health, but we didn't want to do just your same old webinar. You did a great job doing a great set that was around the issue. And again, to make it even funnier, we were all on mute. So everybody was laughing, but right. She couldn't hear it. Dina couldn't hear it. So she got no
feedback. I was also in the moment, the nervousness of the technical things. I was not totally technically not prepared. Mitzi, you and I had this wonderful foil, because you're coming in with the science and I'm coming in with the humor. And as I said, I will make up jokes. I will not make up science. And it is that palatable way, you know, you can catch more flies with honey than with vinegar. And in the history of the world, yelling at someone never got them to do anything. The lecturing and the anger and the angst and the anxiety and all the things that we are fighting against, the inequality and the inequity of the systems, right? Let's get serious for a moment. But when we deliver them with a shot of humor and a funny story, and when we touch the emotion and we get real about it, so it's not me against you, it's me and you against the problem. And I don't know that when I started doing comedy or even just growing up, I was always funny, but I didn't analyze it as much now. That humor, they're in so many ways, emotionally, psychologically, and on a practical level, truly does help people learn better. There's an app, in fact, called Endeavor for people with children and adults with ADHD. And I was just diagnosed a few years ago, so I'm playing catch up on all the learning. But my first reaction was like, well, that makes sense. My second reaction was, yay, 10 million new friends. I get to join another club. But this app, in their research, and it's brain training and gamifying habits and learning. So like neuroscience to me, fascinating. They found with the women, adult women, and I'm assuming for the most part over 30, 40, humor, the feedback they got was that the humor was the most attractive thing, the most attractive part of the game. Like, that's what helped them learn the best. And I know that when we're having fun, we learn something quicker and stronger and better than if it's just we're being lectured to. And then once we can break down the stigma and we can talk about it in a way that isn't killing our self-esteem or like, oh my God, that's shameful. Shame is a big issue with women in healthcare and life in general. That's my long-winded, serious way to deliver a punchline.
That's how, you know, again, we were talking about that that's a way to approach serious or sensitive topics, but you also have to be sensitive in the humor. So, Steve, how do you approach sensitive topics with respect to when you're writing or creating something that is going to, again, go out to the public?
I'd love to say that I do. I also think there's this other side that humor used well can serve people. Humor used in a bad way to put people down or do whatever can also put people off. I think that drama, although it's drama, you're told to find humor in everything. Even if you're doing a drama, you need humor. It's part of life. And so as part of life, there's a thin line between humor and hate or anger or whatever you want to say. There's a line that butts up against a story told truly, honestly. You want to make people feel a little on edge, a little bit thinking and a little insecure. But then you come in with the humor of something and it changes kind of to make the point. But I don't think you shy away from something that is necessarily deep. People are going to know when they go see some film, they're probably looking at something that's going to be similar to that. It does move, again, as long as it brings out emotion and moves people and are remembered for that, it could do anything. It could solve issues. Spotlight certainly wasn't humorous per se, certainly moved people and got some changes made as time goes by.
You're referring to the movie Spotlight.
Yeah, the movie Spotlight, sorry.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying there's a simplicity and a complexity about the whole thing. We started telling stories in the caveman days in the cave. They would draw little things. Every mm-hmm. archaeological dig, I was watching a documentary the other day, goes back to reenact a story and to share it with somebody. They used humor back then too. It's human nature to want to laugh. It's human nature.
Wait, how do you know they used humor?
Because if you look at the little drawings, that's in a certain way, you can see a lot of humor. Some of it I can't go into on this podcast. But I just say it's there are ways to tell what they were trying to say. I mean, I'm not an expert, obviously.
But your point about, you know, communicating is so important rather than going eye to eye. Sometimes people seem to be on parallel paths. But Dina, you were going to say something. What were you wanting to say?
I like what you said about the parallel paths. I work with words, right? I love words. You can't get me to stop using words. Mm-hmm. I never thought of this. Humor and human, H-U-M. What is the root? Latin, Greek, caveman. I'd love to look that up. And I speak 4.5 languages. You'd think I would know this by now. As you're talking, Steve, and as Mitzi, as you're talking, and I'm thinking back, I never strategically or scientifically analyzed humor. We talk about it. We see the effects. I connect with people. I mean, just going to comedy classes is a way to, like, you get to know a lot about people. And I not even jokingly, my very first class, I did my first open mic and then totally unprepared. Like, I just did it without knowing really how to start. I mean, I talked for 5 minutes. Everyone got up on stage and revealed something really raw and personal. Whether or not it was funny wasn't even the issue. We each had our 5 minutes. One man just broke down crying his eyes out. So we were all incredibly uncomfortable. And then he said, oh no, I'm an actor. I wanted to show my range. And the teacher's like, don't do that in stand up. you know, maybe in the middle. But he's an amazing actor. But I looked around. I was like, no one signed an NDA. There's no confidentiality agreements. We don't even know each other's last names. We are getting up on a stage in front of a class. Okay, New Yorkers, we share a lot. We're an open people. But we were sharing things that, like I said, things my best friends might not have known at that point. And there was a certain amount of trust. Humor is a delivery mechanism. It's a tool. There's an expression I like. I don't know who said it, but I use it. We're not writing for the laugh. We're writing for the truth.
Right.
What's the underlying message? And you can deliver it in multiple ways.
Right. You know, and it's interesting what you just talked about, because when you were talking about the class, obviously it felt safe. And I have to connect the dots to perhaps, for me, obviously that's what I'm thinking about, is how do we, as healthcare professionals or therapists or, you know, how do we create safe spaces so people can tell their story? And I look at the healthcare system, and right or wrong, there isn't enough time a lot of times to tell the story. So it's frustrating for the physician. Perhaps the physician just wants the, you know, the facts, ma'am, so we can tell you what the answer is. But yet it's so valuable to hear someone's story in the context of what's important to them, maybe what their home life is about, what it is that they think is wrong. You know, what is it that's most troubling to them? We may think it's, you know, one thing, but it might be the fact that, you know, it's not about the pain. It's about the fact they can't dance mm-hmm. anymore. And so I just kind of want to throw that out. And because I don't have the answer, I can't tell people that are listening, you know, have a 5-minute story in your pocket. But I would say, to the extent that you can interject that or say, hey, I need to tell you why, that's something that I would suggest. Because again, giving facts, it is going to have some impact. The real impact is how you really package that right. For that individual. Steve, you want to say something, please?
Oh, yeah. No. When one of the master classes that I take, they bring in people who aren't just actors. They bring in people who are either teachers or even in the medical field or whatever, mostly those who give speeches. But it's interesting because there's two sides to the story that you're just talking about. Is the medical professional who has to listen to hear, and the person telling the story and what they're getting across. Doing something, oddly enough, like an acting class or some kind of thing, get somebody attuned to the other people and their vulnerabilities and how they talk candidly and so forth and how to listen, which can help in their profession. But the person coming in, when they tell a story, and I'll give you an example, someone that we both know, and I won't mention the name, will have an issue with her physical being and sort of like, yeah, it's not that important. So when she goes to the doctor, she'll say something about it, but it's in such a way the doctor goes, okay, it's not a big deal. Whereas so if she came in and said, no, you have to listen. This is really coming out. I gotta know what the answer is. That evokes a different emotion from the person on the other side. So it's really about how you tell it, but also the emotion that comes through with it.
You know, that's really interesting, because women, again, gross overgeneralized stereotype, but it's true, I think, more often than not, is that we just want to minimize things, or we're so used to perhaps being told, you know, it's fine or whatever it is. We have, for anybody who's listened or gets our newsletter, I hyperlinked a video of Elizabeth Banks, who did a great program on heart, on someone having a heart attack for the American Heart Association. And in the middle of all this stuff, you know, and she's calling 911, she's, I'm sorry to bother you, but, you know, and here she is, she has a life-threatening issue. And it wasn't so far-fetched. I mean, again, I think a lot of us saw ourselves in her as she's minimizing things. And so your point about giving yourself permission to be more assertive and to say what's really going on is, I think, a really important point. Dean, I want to also go back a little bit because I don't want to leave the humor piece. You have used humor in therapeutic settings. Talk to us a little bit about
so
that.
So as a social worker, right, I worked in oncology, palliative care, transplant floor. Alzheimer's was, geriatrics was my specialty. And the humor therapy, there was a couple of different facilities I worked at in the therapeutic setting, especially because, and in the situations I was working in, where patients and families are in crisis, they're in trauma, they may or may not have support systems. It, you know, having family and support systems certainly helps, but it can also exacerbate the problems, right? When you have family conflict and drama. So being able to bring everyone together in a way that isn't conflictual, that isn't me against you, and release that tension. And then just, you're in a hospital, you're recovering from illness, you've had an amputation, you're dealing with dementia, your loved one has had a stroke and will not regain the same functions they used to. This is all incredibly serious stuff. Just sometimes to get through the day, to push yourself to do an exercise, to normalize what you're going to have to deal with in a way that isn't constantly crying and screaming and grieving. You know, even my grandmother's eulogy, we had jokes in there because it just relieved the tension. And she was the kind of woman, and this is how they ended it. But she had a good sense of humor, and she was an extrovert also. Tiny little women, feisty. She would have said, what are you all doing here? Go back to work.
Steve, you were nodding as well. Did you want to add something?
I hope I'm not saying something offensive. I don't mean to. It's not that way. It's just, you know, acting what you pay attention to is other people. And some females always feel as if they have to apologize in their voice. So there's this question mark. It's not like a something definite, even if you know that black is black and white is white. It's like black, white. And it takes so much to overcome that and experience what it's like to not do that.
Sure. My girls will roll their eyes because when we are going out to dinner and they say, could I have the salmon? I'm like, of course you can have the salmon. Let's talk about, I would like the salmon. And, you know, and it is, I can see them struggle with, you know, changing that. And I'm sure I do the same thing. And again, wanting to connect this to patient empowerment. We don't always think about practicing to go to the doctor, but I think we should practice to go to the doctor, especially when you've got 15 minutes and the doctor's, you know, busy and the doctor wants to know what's going on so he or she can help you with that issue. I think we could all really benefit from saying, okay, I'm not going to apologize. Just little things. I'm not going to apologize. I'm going to speak my truth, if you will. I'm going to be as succinct as I can, but I'm going to get out what I need to get out. And if I can't get it out, then perhaps we can make another appointment or I can find a way to finish up the conversation. But I think this is something that we don't talk about enough and that we need to. And the other piece that you brought up, Steve, was I think as physicians, healthcare providers, we need to tune in faster. You know, there's a lot to be said by looking at body language, listening to different syntax, as well as giving that person the safe space and the permission to speak. I worked a lot with survivors of domestic violence, and sometimes all you needed to say was, that was really terrible, because a lot of times no one says that. Mm-hmm. And just to be able to validate someone's experience. So again, I think there's work that can be done on both, in both arenas. But if you're going to get what you need, you do need to come in prepared. Now, Dina, please, what were you going to say?
So, Mitzi, you're coming from the point of view as a practitioner who's listening to patient stories. And you mentioned that patients need to be able to tell the story in a concise way. The facts, this is why I scribbled all these notes, plus the tone, right? If I'm like, oh, I have this issue, but it's not a problem, or I have this issue and it's a problem and it's affecting my whole life, you get a different, it can be the same fact with a different tone, the delivery, and then how it's received. And as a doctor, like, I'm not criticizing anyone now. We can all use that training. And here's where I think the business idea comes in. And I'm sure AI can come into play of helping patients craft those stories with the fact, and then the delivery of women, not like, oh, I think it's a problem. Like, you know, my name is Lisa.
There's that question.
And we learn this in theater. And this is something I coach clients in presentations. So we're not reinventing the wheel, but we're taking something that we're already learning in the business world of how to, I teach this, I've learned it, I consult on it, how to create a presentation, whether it's, you know, your slides, your story, what are the facts, the executive summary, taking 18 pages and synthesizing it, and then how you deliver it, right? And then who's listening? What is their goal? Know your audience. So for you as a clinician who's listening, you want, your motivation is to not even just do no harm, but to help. So you want to get that information in all of those ways. And you're like, doctors aren't necessarily coached or trained in NLP or reading body language. And something I've noticed a lot recently with just my own doctors and in general, they're type, this is me in a doctor's office, type, she's clickety-clack, therapists are doing it. They're missing all of the nuances.
I had an idea as well, but I was more going into workshop and symposiums or something where people get together, where the doctor gets together with patients and they work these scenarios out and they get to play, act these things out. And I also think it's today's society where we're less, we don't have the time, we don't have what to focus, we don't have whatever. So it's really like you don't really listen and you don't, your bedside manner kind of went to the side.
It's all about the data,
it's,
you know.
And, right, and turnover.
Know, what's also interesting to me, and I've told this story so many times, but there is a linguist, Deborah Tannen, and she wrote You Just Don't Understand, among other books, that talks about the difference between the genders and how we communicate. She has one about business. And this one wasn't even about healthcare, but when I read it, I had this aha moment, because she talks about, again, gross generalization. Women look for context. They need eye contact to be heard, to your point, Dina. And so when we tell husband John, and he's watching the Super Bowl, you know, I need you to go out afterwards and get these three things. And he's still looking at the Super Bowl, goes, you haven't heard me. And he goes, yeah, I heard you. You need 1, 2, and 3. He did hear, because he doesn't need that context, but she does. So what I did is I translated that into the doctor's office. And so I realized that exactly what you said, Dina, even though it was going to take me longer and whatever, is I put down my notes, and I made sure I was looking at my female patient, because that I knew was important. Well, I want to shift a little bit, because not only are you guys great storytellers and performers, but you also shared that you've had a number of professional transitions. And I think that that's probably more the norm, and I'll include myself as well, than it is the exception. But it does take courage, and it does take a willingness to, you know, learn something new. So and especially as we get older. Steve, talk to that a little bit in terms of your experience.
I think fear is a great motivator, too.
Okay, so what were you afraid of?
Oh, God.
Because obviously you were more afraid of not doing it than doing it.
I'm insecure. I think somewhere along the way I got some female gene or something.
Sorry, going to take offense at that. I'm going to take exception to that, Steve, because that's the old school. I was going to say it's because you're an actor.
Well, it's either I didn't mean it in that sense. I didn't mean that it wasn't. All I mean is because I tend to think everybody has certain parts of this, whether they acknowledge it or they don't. Sure. It's just that the sensitivity and the understanding that I have is more in line with what I'm hearing from kinds of things you're saying than necessarily where I would identify with some football player who. You know, but they're people too, so I can't even say that. But I'm just trying to say that's, you know.
It's okay. You can stop digging. I won't put this.
I'm sorry.
I'm trying to save myself.
I'm sorry.
I really am.
It's okay.
I'm a good guy.
But there is a point in all this, right?
The more evolved person has a little bit of both, right?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I do. I whether it's been kept down in some cases. Or whether it's been told you can't do it from the other end, life, certain things have altered it. I guess for me, the reason I said fear, when I was a kid particularly, I was a depressed individual who probably was somewhat suicidal. And, you know, going in, first of all, finding that my uniqueness in my acting pulled me out and showed me I was something more than just this alone person who, you know, whatever. And it's sort of like you're walking around at the age of 28 in New York City and you're doing just odd jobs, getting temp jobs and trying to exist. And you've never had money, you've never had a wife, you've never had a relationship, you've never been with anybody. And at that point, that's where fear came in, because I had to do something. And I happened to get into computers and then project management with that experience. And I can tell you, working in project management, the guys ahead are computers. Many stories like mine where you didn't intend to do that, but you got there to make money or to do the work. And it was fun. It was good. It wasn't terrible, but it was not something you loved. And I saw other people around me and they just accepted where they were and they really had other things, but they just made peace with making them hobbies. Or not doing anything with them because they were in their 40s and 50s and scared about what it would affect or not do. I think I got lucky, seriously, because I met my wife, which gave me opportunities I might not have had. I don't know. But at some point, as I was doing more and more work in the 2000s, and when I first started back with some small theater, I did 7 plays in 1 year, and I was a project manager, and I had to go from Columbia, Maryland to Washington, D.C., which is about an hour and a half or so, even though it's 20 miles, but an hour and a half to get to work. I get in at 8, I'd leave at 5, hop in the car, go up to Baltimore, which is another hour, and then I'd rehearse until like 11 or whatever, midnight, wake up again at about 4 or 5 and start it all over again. And I don't know how I did it. I can't tell you. Today, I couldn't do that to save my life. But back then, I just loved it. And I needed to, my spring opened up when I got back into it. And it's that drive. It's that passion. It's that love of something that there's a love-hate thing going on. But it basically, you know, that transition taught me a lot. And when you do finally believe in something, in yourself a little, things can sprout from that. And you start discovering in your 60s that all of a sudden, hey, I can write. I can produce. I can do some other things. This is really cool. And my life is great. You know, and those transitions, everything about what you do ends up in stories somewhere. They're golden nuggets, bad or good. They're gold.
Sure. Thank you for sharing that. Dina, how about you? You really have also gone through a number of transitions, and I think you're starting to get back into performing and comedy.
I mean, I'm listening to Steve's story, and there's so many messages and universal human themes, and also that's your life, Steve, that you're sharing with people. There's a lot I relate to as well. I did not know what I wanted to be when I grow up. You know, back then or even now, I was like, oh, trying something new.
I still haven't figured mine out.
Define grown up also, right?
Yeah.
Again, humor, right? Like, you know, maybe getting older, but I'm never growing up. We're getting any taller. With your story, Steve, so for me, because I was so tiny, still am. I mean, I was like, I was really short growing up and I'm still short, but growing up, I was bullied. I was teased. I was excluded. I was not confident.
Steve is pointing to himself for those who can't see.
Yeah, and I know everyone
agreeing,
has some
understanding,
similar,
resonating.
Like we all think, oh no, we were the outcasts, we were the freaks, the geeks, the whatever. Sure. I mean, I wasn't a nerd or a geek because I didn't have those kinds of smarts, but I was the creative and the artsy-fartsy and the weird kid. And somebody, I will not say who, said to me, why can't you be normal? And the person who said it, you know, that was really rough to hear. But because of that, for me, not knowing where I fit in, not fitting in, not feeling, you know, feeling very, feeling, looking, acting very different than everyone else. I think also humor back then, it was a way I could connect. It was a way I had some confidence. And the stage was the one place I did truly feel confident. I wanted to go into the arts, but I also realized there was no way I was going to make it as a trip, tall, leggy, blonde singer, dancer, actress. No, I like back then. And I also liked business and I worked in business. And then when I got into social work, it was because I wanted to do something meaningful and that where I felt I could really, it was purpose. And Steve, that was one of the themes from your story that I kept hearing was, what is our purpose? And being able to pursue our purpose at any age. And Mitzi, to the, you know, to your point about the theme of this, how does our work, whether it's comedy, acting, doctor, investor, business strategist, coach, we'll get back to the webinars and the symposiums because I actually did that. I was running these training programs for healthcare professionals because I saw a need. So it was part of my purpose of like, I can help them take this really boring litany of all these issues where it sounded like they were lecturing the healthcare workers who were just trying to help and turn it into, here's my story where you evoke emotion. And then you're like, how can we fix this together? And when I moved to New York, marketing Broadway shows, I landed a job through networking, marketing Broadway shows. And that was a dream come true. And I found in New York, the way people responded to me without any preconceived notion of my past or who I was, it was just, this is who you are. And everyone in New York is different and doesn't quite fit in and is from somewhere else. And that was the validation. And we're all looking for that validation, whether it's at the doctor's office, in our work, volunteering, collaborating on a podcast. We want to, you know, validate who we are. We want to look at what can we bring to the world? How can we make an impact on each other? And that helps our mental health. And that helps create community and support. So to, you know, wrap it all up and bring it together, all the different things I've done in my life is still about connecting with people.
I think that what really resonated with me is the fear of being stagnant or not doing it or regretting bigger than the fear of actually taking the risk and something to think about. So as we wrap up, a couple more questions. Steve, you have a new project, so I want to give you a chance to talk about it because you're still going full steam ahead.
You bet. I don't know why, but I am. No, because as the film is called, It's Never Too Late.
Exactly.
Which is, I said, is about a 70-year-old man. Hey, in the near future of 2034, he's 70 years old and suffocating from the environmental crisis and AI technology exploding, and he has asthma and he suffers from lack of human contact and connection and a loss of purpose. And he had his only, the poor air quality is so bad outside that now people are having to stay inside all the time. And so his only real comfort is his AI virtual assistant, who he names after his dead wife, and who fills a certain need until she breaks down. And then he has no choice but to connect to a help desk. And through trials and tribulations that occur between him and the guy in the help desk, he finds a human connection. And he basically finds his purpose of how to go now, before he actually does something to himself. And then there's the ending, which is a smile on my face, by the way, which is a huge.
You're not going to be a, no spoiler alert.
Twist.
You're in the midst of developing this. Do you want to say anything more about that?
Oh, yeah. I am doing a Kickstarter at the moment at www.thenevertoolate.com. And we are over $10,000 right now. Our goal is $35,000. So we need money, or pledging, as we say, because if we don't get all of it, we don't get any of it. So this is, the next 2 weeks are crucial. And so the other thing that's going to be happening next week, and you're the first to hear it, although by the time you hear it, it'll probably already have happened. But basically, we're having a challenge. If we get 100 new backers in the week, there's another backer who will give $5,000. But it has to happen.
What's the drop dead date?
The drop dead, we're done March 15th. Okay. So hopefully you'll hear this before. But at any rate, it's something not only deeply personal to me, but I really have come to believe over time that this is something that's going to make people think about things that they're accepting today. Hmm. And I know that is going to be something important. It's going to have some impact.
Dina, how about you? What's next for you?
To Steve's point of it's never too late, I want to work with founders. I want to work with organizations, communities, and companies in health tech, femtech, and particularly in sex tech. As you know, mental health and wellness, the loneliness epidemic, and sexual health and wellness, in particular for women over 50, and developing adult friendships. For me, those are all the themes. It's relationships. So yes, I offer coaching and consulting, and I speak on a lot of stages and comedy clubs and running programs and workshops, but I want a relationship. I want someone to put a ring on it. I want someone to put a ring on it.
I don't know those. I hate to tell you, but most of our listeners.
Well, no, but
maybe
I mean,
they know somebody.
Both. So you know me, Mitzi. She's like, wait a minute. You're talking about your love life or your business life? I'm like, well, both. But right, I, in fact, today launching a new mailing list, and it says, oh, you put a ring on it. You joined my mailing list, right? I'm in the business and pleasure of relationships. I want to work with and for this industry. I want a role where I can contribute and bring my age, my experience, my humor, my business savvy, and contribute and collaborate and be part of a cast and crew. So that is my offer and my ask to everybody listening. Call me.
So before we totally sign off, Steve, anything I didn't ask that you wanted to make sure we mentioned to our audience?
I think I just bared my entire life. I don't know. I guess the only thing I would say, that not that we left out, but I want to say is, be remiss if I didn't, how not only proud, but how much I admire you for building this empire you've built. And Dina, you know, you've done so much to impact people and to do the things you're doing. I'm humbled myself by all of it. And all I can say is I think that the one note of why through all of us, and it's very interesting, is we wanted to make a difference. We wanted to impact people and make a difference in our lives. And we chose things that would do that. And I think, to me, I can't think of a better, more honorable way to address it.
Wow. Well, thank you for your kind words. I really appreciate that. I'm very touched. Thank you. Dina, what did I forget to ask you?
Oh, I think you probably want to stop me from talking at a certain point. I would end with like...
All right, I'll time you. How's that?
I'll end with some grand... I mean, 2 minutes. You can do a lot in 2 minutes. Don't you know, Mitzi, it takes women longer than 2 minutes to get warmed up and tell a story? You know, purpose, passion, people, power. We're all in it together. Some are more together than others. You know, some are more connected or less connected than others. But ultimately, we have to come together, work together, and play together. So whatever we're doing, as hard as it may be, and as frustrating as the system may be, let's have fun while we fight. I'll bring
that's a great
the fun.
Way to end.
I promise that.
and the real fun. Yeah.
I just need a man to have fun with when I'm done working. I'm putting that out to all the women. You know what? We got a lot of Jewish mothers and others' mothers out there. Help a girl out.
Yeah, I want to see how many rings you get out of this.
I just want one. I love being with lots of people and having lots of relationships, but I'd like to start with one.
And on that note, I want to thank Steve Lichtenstein and Dina Bakowitz so much for being with me and sharing your stories and really sharing the humor. It was wonderful. Thank you both.
Thank you.
As we conclude today's episode, I hope this conversation was helpful to you and that you have a new perspective on the value of shared experiences, the vital role of humor in our lives, and the collective strength found in our stories. We'd love to hear about your personal story or what you think about this episode, so please comment on our social media or go to our website at beyondthepapergown.com and leave a message. While you're there, subscribe to our newsletter for updates on our podcast, women's health events and activities, and news on women's health topics. As always, thanks for joining me, and take good care. This episode was produced by Patrick Shambayati and me, and our associate producer is Kyla McMillian.
If you enjoyed podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Healthcare for Humans, hosted by Dr. Sundar, expands our understanding of the history and culture of different communities and how to provide culturally responsive care. There's an episode you should check out where guest Dr. Duran, D details the systemic barriers faced by individuals with DACA status and highlights the importance of addressing these barriers. Check out Healthcare for Humans on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.